my intention was to read with you some of the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, because these prayers, practically speaking, these prayers are like some of the most classic verses in the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Prahlad Charit, the teachings, instructions of the story of Prahlad Maharaj, and the Dhruva pastime, which we're going to hear also. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat it says that Gadadha Pandit would sing these to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu over and over, hundreds of times, and he would always cry because he was so attached to these wonderful verses. So here we're going to hear how Prahlad Maharaj, just this very small boy, so if we have any small... How old is he? Six. He's just three. Can you get him to stand up? Stand up. This is a little six-year-old. You see how small he is? Can you imagine a little boy like this, if you wanted to pick him up and torture him, who would want to do this? And tomorrow, well, maybe his mother sometimes. And who is? How old is this man?
How old are you?
Three. Oh, look at that. Can you imagine if he went to the forest? If he got lost out here in the bush somewhere, we would all be out looking for him in great anxiety. He's so delicate. And these two boys, both of these boys, this is a hint for tomorrow when we ask what they have in common. They were both young princes. So a prince means that he's hand and foot taken care of. He has servants for every need that he may have. He has special food cooked for him. He has a beautiful, comfortable bed that he sleeps in. And look, here we have another one over here, Arjuna. Imagine if he got lost. Hare Krishna, Arjuna. Now he's shy. But if he got lost, we would all be in so much anxiety. What to speak of trying to kill him? So these two boys, both the teachings of both these boys, their prayers are very classical, very powerful presentations of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so what I want to start with is text 9, Canto 7, Chapter 9, text 9. And what I want to ask you to do, I want you either to read like this or read in your book. And first of all, somebody, who shall we get? Deepak, can you please read out loud this particular translation? You have the book?
No.
Oh, who has the book? Okay, you can read. Yes. Read text the translation nine. To text 9. Yes, text 9.
Prahlad Maharaj continued.
I'm sorry, wait. Can you read the translation to text 8?
Text 8.
I beg your pardon. This is our first prayer, text 8.
Prahlad Maharaj prayed, "How is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Even until now, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma and all the saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words, although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness. Then what is to be said of me? I am not at all qualified."
So if you are following this verse, either here or you're reading it from a book, I want to ask you a question. What do you think is the quality that Prahlad Maharaj is expressing in this particular verse?
Goodness.
Goodness?
Quality of a Vaishnava.
Quality of a Vaishnava. What particular quality?
Goodness.
Humility. Humility. I was also thinking goodness, yes. Vaishnava quality, yes. But particularly in this verse, very humble. Because he's been asked to speak by all the demigods. They've asked him. Now what we have to do is not all look at the... Again, because that means there's no concentration. So please, the more important thing is the ear. But the hearing, the looking is to assist with the ear, not vice versa. So this, in this particular verse, he says, "What qualification do I have to offer prayers to you? I'm here, I'm just the demigods haven't been able to satisfy you. I've been born into a very, very low family, a demonic family, a very impious family. So how can I possibly satisfy you with prayers? I am not qualified. So this is an example of humility. I think we should stop it. Yeah, only come up with the verse and nothing more. Otherwise, it becomes a distraction. You can turn it on again when we need another one. So, Prabhupada says, for those who can look on with the book, he says two things. He says, one should not be falsely proud of his Vaishnava qualification. Those who have a book can go ahead and read the purport even whilst I'm speaking, and they can share with us anything that they see that strikes them in the purport. And for the others, I will continue to be speaking and they can listen. He says one should not be falsely proud of his Vaishnava qualification. So he was the most qualified. He wasn't like somebody who he comes in and he doesn't know anything and you say to him, please can you give a lecture? Oh, I don't know anything, I'm very sorry, I can't speak. He was extraordinarily qualified, and yet this was his mood. That I'm just born in a very low class family, so how can I offer any prayers to you? And Srila Prabhupada finishes this purport by saying, in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly, and then, unless one is meek and humble, to make progress in spiritual life is very difficult. So this is something that Prahlad Maharaj is going to teach us. But progress is difficult without humility, and he will manifest this humility in all of his dealings. And yet, then I would like to ask you one more question. Can anyone put this prayer into their own words? What they think from this prayer, if it was there, they were in a position to pray this, how would they put it into their own words? Anyone willing to try? Yes.
If I want to pray to the Lord, I tell that I am very much fallen.
Yes.
And I have been gone through many births and deaths. A lot of contamination is there. So I am very unqualified.
Very nice. So this is what I would like to share with you as a process. Actually as a process for reading the Bhagavatam. Only in a small sample because we only have like 25-35 minutes. But to read the Bhagavatam, the verses as we go, and to think how you would feel about that, what you would say. Because if you read the verses, very classical, very formal, it's written like this in a very, very very high fashion. So sometimes when we read the verses, we think, yes, that's nice, we go to the next one, but it doesn't seem to touch us. So it's very important actually to be able to take a verse and think, what does that mean to me? How does that relate to me? In other words, what would I say if I was offering a similar prayer? So we heard this morning about prayers, three specific prayers of Lord Brahma. We're going to hear about prayers today, and tomorrow also we're going to hear about prayers and do another exercise. So please, let us see if we can do this. Now the next verse, for those who can turn to it, is verse number 12. Kunja, do you have a book? Manjulali, you have a book? Can you please read this one? Text 12.
Therefore, although I was born in a demoniac family, and I may without a doubt offer prayers to the Lord with full endeavor, as far as my intelligence allows. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world, have you purified the material life?
So here is an interesting, this is only 9, 10, 11, 12. He begins by saying, I'm not qualified to offer prayers. What is he saying here? And what is his mood?
Humility.
Humility, yes. What else?
He's also implying that that birth need not be a necessary qualification for entering devotional life.
Yes.
Anyone can practice devotional.
Yes, anyone can practice devotional life. So what is he, what quality is he expressing here?
Hearing.
Huh?
Hearing. Anyone who has heard the Lord's
hearing?
Glory can.
Yes. What else? Let me hear
some. Sincerity.
Sincerity. Anything else?
Dedication.
Endeavor, dedication, determination. Any others? Intelligence, yes. endeavor. Yeah, there's one particular one I'm interested to see if anyone else can find it.
Certainty.
Close to certainty. Starts with a C. Very close to certainty.
Conviction.
Very close.
Faith.
Certainty, conviction. It's another one. Very close to that.
Strong faith.
Strong faith, yes. This is one that's in the Upadeshamrita. Confidence. Yes, confidence. Certainty. All of these, conviction. He's offering, now he's feeling confident. At first he was feeling humble. Sometimes people ask, what's the difference between humility and low self-esteem? When I feel that I'm actually worthless, so what can I do? I can't do anything. I'm feeling so depressed. I have to do something about this depression. I can't. Don't tell me I have any faults because it puts me into depression. I go to low self-esteem. So what is the difference between humility, where you're thinking, I'm so fallen, I'm so low, and low self-esteem? Does anyone, can anyone answer on that? Humility, Krishna is in the center. Low self-esteem, where in the center? Yes?
With low self-esteem, you're looking for recognition. You're sometimes feeling that they are not recognizing me, and therefore my worth is not of value. Whereas the person may be very humble, knows that they are lower than the blade of grass, but yet they still find value besides that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. They still find value in themselves. Even though they know that they're very fallen, they're insignificant, they still find value in themselves. Yes, Sweta.
They realize that they're a part, in humility, they realize they're a part and parcel of the Lord, but that the Lord and the Lord is so much more than just part and parcel.
Yes.
Whereas in self-esteem, you don't recognize that you're part and parcel of the Lord.
Yes. This is a very important one. In depression, one feels isolated. That I'm so low, I'm so unhappy, I'm so worthless, and there's no hope. Whereas with humility, you recognize that Krishna is very great. Real humility can only occur when we can see Krishna. In some little degree even, that he's so perfect, and I'm also perfect, but I'm very small. And now I'm covered up. And so I have so many imperfections. But even in my perfect state, I am just a tiny, tiny. And he is so great. And when that is combined also with affection, with love, then that becomes actually very sweet. It doesn't sound sweet to us, because the two are quite, they're quite synonymous in Western culture. Humility and depression, they come quite near to the border of each other in modern society, but in actuality they're quite different. And so from his humility he acquires this confidence, I can. And as we heard, and it doesn't depend on my family, it doesn't depend where I was born, what is my nationality, what is this, what are my qualifications, it doesn't depend on that. So now who is going to summarize this verse? Can we see the verse again now, please? Or from your book, anyone would like to give us a summary in your own words? What do you feel from this verse if you were to say, to be expressing this to Krishna, to Lord Nisringadev actually? Here we're praying to Lord Nisringadev. Yes.
One needs to feel very unqualified at all points in time, but at the same time have confidence that though you're unqualified, there's still hope against hope.
Okay, put it into the first person.
I.
Yes.
Though I am very unqualified to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I definitely have hope against hope because of the mercy of the Vaishnavas and the spiritual master and the seriousness with which I do my sadhana.
Okay. So by my own sincerity, I have hope. By my own intention, I have hope and I have confidence as a result. All right. The next one I would like to see. There's two together. First, verse 15, and then verse 16. Now, when we were doing this puppet show that we'll see after this, when we got to the end of this, we'd made the puppet show in 1983, and my son was just a little bigger than Arjuna. And when we were making the puppet show, at the end, when Lord Nisringadev appeared, just like Arjuna might do, but there's too many people here and it's not dark, He completely became terrified, my son, screaming and screaming and screaming. I had to take him from the room when Lord Srinagadeva appeared with a giant roar. So he was terrified. The sound, the noise, the everything together, it was too much. And he was very frightened. Now let's see what Prahlad Maharaj is saying, because he's seeing this. This was just a tiny puppet show. So who will read this one? Yes.
My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue, your eyes bright like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp pinching teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears. Nor do I fear your tumultuous blowing, which makes elephants flee in distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies.
So all of these, of this fierce appearance, he was so fierce. Can you imagine seeing somebody who's there? They've got nails like this covered in blood. You know, you'd all run. You know, what is this? And he was still angry. It wasn't as if he was now peaceful and calm, even though he was transcendental. He was furious. He was so angry that Srila Prabhupada says in one lecture that Lakshmi wouldn't go near because she had never seen her husband in this mood. She had never seen this, so she wasn't even quite sure if it was her husband, because he was so angry and his roar was so deafening. So he, all of this, completely none of this was frightening at all to Prahlad. In fact, when Prahlad came near, in the Bhakti, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it describes that Lord Nisringadeva got down off the throne and sat on the floor and put Prahlad Maharaj on his lap and started licking him like a mother lioness grooms her cubs, and licking his whole body, and he was so soft and pleased. Or you see a cat, right? If you've seen, everyone has seen a cat licking their kittens. So he was, and purring. He was so pleased with Prahlad. And Prahlad is coming up to him and he's saying, I'm not afraid of any of these horrifically fierce aspects. What is this an example of? Fearlessness. Anything else? Yes.
Prahlad completely understand that he is the same merciful Lord, though he is appeared in the ferocious form.
Yes. That's a nice point also. He was fearless and he understood. Yes, did you want to say?
Lord is the protector of devotees, so he will not harm the devotees.
Yes. He would not harm him. So he was confident he wouldn't harm him and he was fearless. Now, let's look at the next verse and let's read this one. Deepak, read this one.
O most powerful, insubmortal Lord, who are kind to the fallen soul, I have been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities, and therefore I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. When will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which are ultimate goal for the liberation from the conditional life?
So here, we're hearing what? What is he saying here? Yes, but what is he saying here in contrast to the last one?
Fear.
Opposite. He's frightened. He's expressing fear. Just before he said, I'm not afraid of this ferocious feature of yours with all of these different aspects that would frighten anyone, but I'm very, very much afraid of material life. Now, I want to go to text 43. Because we're going to hear him contrast, he's going to say something contradictory here. I'll read this one. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. Now he just said he was afraid. Now he's saying I'm not afraid. He says, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am concerned with love for them. So what is this? Here's another aspect.
Compassion.
Compassion. And in his compassion, he's admitting that for himself, he's actually not afraid. Because he's strong enough. His love of Krishna is strong enough that he is not going to waver. But he feels very, very sorry to see all the people of this world who are making so many plans and have so many ambitions to try to enjoy life here in this world. And seeing that their plans, as he said earlier, he's afraid of the condition of life within this material world. In the association of irreligious or materialistic people. And Prabhupada says in the earlier text 16, he says, being in the material world is certainly miserable, but certainly when one is put into the association of asuras or atheistic men, it is intolerably so. So he's expressing this, but not for himself. He's saying, I'm feeling this, but he's expressing it on behalf of others, because they are feeling this, they are experiencing this. And Prabhupada says, at the end of text 16, he says, thus Prahlad Maharaj expected that the Lord, by his kindness, would call him back again to the shelter of his lotus feet. In other words, and this is what the message is for us, everyone should be eager to return home back to Godhead, taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus being fully trained in Krishna consciousness. Now, I would like to go to the next one. This is a very practical one. If you think of this, is a very thought-provoking one. This is text 18. Wait, sorry. It's not text 18, wait. It's text 17. Text 17. Vera, can you read this one?
O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service.
So what do we have to say about that?
Surrender.
Material hopelessness. Very realized. We have to become very realized. Prabhupada said, unless we're materially exhausted, we're not very good candidates for spiritual life. So of course there are those who don't need, they have already got very fine intelligence, and they don't need to become materially exhausted because they will use all of their material facilities in the service of the Lord, like Prahlad. He doesn't require to be exhausted because he's already willing to give everything to the Lord. But somebody, a stubborn materialist, he has to try and try and try again to enjoy, to be happy, to get this together, to try that, to do this, to do that. And gradually one becomes realized that actually no matter what I try to do, there's trouble and misery. And this point Srila Prabhupada used to like to speak on very much, that the remedy is worse than the misery itself. And so many times, I'll speak here, particularly more for the Western cultural situation, but in the married life, people are married, divorced. In Indian culture, this is not yet as much the standard. It will come if you stay long enough in the Western atmosphere. But generally speaking, Western, there is some family left in Indian culture. But in Western culture, as soon as there's a breakup, and this is in the 12th canto, this is spoken of, as soon as there is some impediment, then we try again, try another one, try this, try that. And this doesn't apply only to married life, this applies to all aspects of life. That people are trying one thing and trying another. And Prabhupada says, anyone who has a book, please read this. What is the last sentence of this purport?
Can be no happy happiness and changing one's material condition. Wherever where there is trouble and misery.
There can be no happiness in changing one's material conditions, for everywhere there is trouble and misery. This is so important to understand. It's not just where you are there's trouble and misery, or where he is there's trouble and misery, or she is there having trouble and misery. Everywhere in the material world there's trouble and misery. And when one understands this, we become wise. Because there's no longer any reason to run away from anything or to... One now decides, when one comes to this point, what is explained here. I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. This is the only remedy for my trouble and my misery. So kindly instruct me in such service. So here again, Prahlad Maharaj, he's fully realized, but he's speaking in this way for our benefit. Now, another verse where he explains actually his position. Okay, we'll look at that one after. Let me try this one with you. Here's another very famous one. This is text 40. Can somebody please read text 40?
Trying to attract him in their own way. For example, the tongue is attracted to palatable dishes, the genitals to sex with an attractive woman, and the senses of touch to contact with soft things. The belly, although filled, still wants to eat more, and the ear, not attempting to hear about you, is generally attracted to cinema songs. The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side. The restless eyes are attracted to scenes of sense gratification, and the active senses are attracted elsewhere. In this way, I am certainly embarrassed.
Well, who can relate to this? I remember one time hearing Srila Prabhupada on a tape. Yes, what were you going to say? Okay. Yes. I remember hearing Srila Prabhupada on a tape one time describing this scene, and he talks about the husband. He comes home, and he has his many wives. And as soon as he walks in the door, one of his wives takes his arm and says, "Please come to my room." And she starts pulling him this way. And then another wife takes his other arm and says, "No, I haven't seen you all day. Please come to my room." And she starts pulling him this way. And he said, and then another one takes his leg and says, "No, come to my room. You haven't seen me all day." And the other one takes his other leg and pulls him in a different direction. And he says, "How can he be happy?" And I remember when he was describing this, I could see, how could you be happy if you came home at night and six people wanted you to go in six different directions? Come this way. No, come this way. You haven't seen me. You haven't. I need you. Come, please, please, come, come. You'd be so distracted by all of this. So this is the position of the living being. Like we were describing Lord Nrisingadev. We were describing Hiranyakashipu, how his senses were uncontrolled. Because he was trying to satisfy and enjoy in every possible way that he could. So there was a pulling in each direction to enjoy this, to enjoy that, to enjoy and so forth. And Prahlad Maharaj speaks of this very negatively. Many wives. Say again? Let us see what let's see what the Sanskrit is. I think Prabhupada has put that in, the ear for hearing some sweet music. So I think Srila Prabhupada has put that in to contemporize the dilemma for our benefit. Now there's one more that I would like to share with you. This is another one that Srila Prabhupada took, this very powerful verse, that Srila Prabhupada would quote this verse often. This is text number 44. So who shall read this one?
My dear Lord Shrinidad, I see that there are many thankful persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance, not caring for the big cities and towns. They go to the Himalayas, or the forest, to meditate with the vows of silence, mana vrat. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be out of woe, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter of your lotus feet.
Now, I'm still looking for the verse that I wanted to find. That's very important. Thank you for reading that. The verse that I was looking at this morning was Prahlad Maharaj was saying to Lord Nisringadev, basically, he said, you have asked me to come here to manifest this example for the benefit of others. And so I have come and done this service on your behalf. So he was quite aware, actually, that he was trying to serve the Lord by his appearance in this world. But this verse that we were reading now, is a very important one. Why do you think this one is important? What is the quality that it manifests?
Selflessness.
Selflessness, what else? Something else?
Preaching?
The mood of ISKCON. Prabhupada's mood, yes. This was Prabhupada's mood. And Srila Prabhupada liked to quote this verse because this was his mood. It was his mood because he didn't want to be saved alone. He wanted to help everybody else. It was also his mood because one time someone was expressing the difficulty, some concern in their endeavor to preach, and Srila Prabhupada quoted this and said, then you should go and live in the Himalayas. then you should not preach. You should go and live like this. You should take care of yourself, in other words. But this was so much Prabhupada's mood. I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without taking shelter, without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter of your lotus feet. So, can we hear somebody, please, who has a book? Who has a book? Do you have a book? Yes. Can you read the first paragraph?
This is the decision of the Vaishnava, pure devotee of the Lord. For himself, he has no problems, even if he has to stay in this material world, because his only business is to remain in Krishna consciousness. A Krishna conscious person can go even to hell and still be happy. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj said, Naivod Vijay Paradhuratyaya Vaitaranya. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. The pure devotee is never unhappy in any condition of life.
So does that contrast our consciousness? Speaking for myself, I would have to say it's a great contrast to how I feel. This compassion that is natural for somebody who is actually purified, it doesn't stay permanently sometimes with us. We have it at times, we feel it very strongly sometimes, And then it can be replaced by so many other thoughts or feelings, and we can become distracted from this. And Prabhupada explains that the reason that we waver in our determination and our compassion is because we're still very much fixed in the bodily identification. And as long as we're thinking, I'm my body, this is me, this is mine, this is my, this, that, and so forth, this depth of compassion cannot actually arise. Because this is a compassion that's situated on the transcendental platform, where one sees that actually I am beyond this world, and so are all these other people, and they should be helped. And I, since I have something, I should give it to them. So when we were coming over here on the aeroplane, I noticed that when they're giving, you know, at the beginning when you're all nicely seated and they've given you your little orange drink, and then the lady comes and she does a demonstration of the seat belt, and this falls down from you, and the oxygen, this comes down, and all of these different things, and you're listening there or not listening. And she says, when the oxygen mask falls down like this, first put your own on, and then you put it on your child. So I listened and I was thinking, why? Because this is very much, we think all the time, give to others. You have to help and give to others. So why do you put it on first yourself and then the child? Just practically thinking, why do you do it? Yes, if you become unconscious, you can't help the child. If the oxygen is going to run out, you first of all, and then you give it to the child. If you put it on the child, and then you die, then what is the benefit for the child? The child needs you. You have to be there to help the child. So similarly, if you want to take up this Krishna consciousness mood, you have to put the oxygen mask of Krishna consciousness on yourself first. And once you put it on yourself, then you put it on someone else. Because as soon as you can breathe and you see them gasping, you'll want to put it onto them. You'll immediately want to help them. But if you're too busy gasping, you may try to put it onto them, but you may not be able. You may not have the strength. So here, this is a very practical point. If you want to help others, you must first of all help yourself. You must adopt a devotional priority in your own life. And if you do that, then it will be quite natural to try to give it to somebody. Even though you may have to say in all humility, I don't really have much knowledge or realization. I don't actually understand very much about spiritual life. But there's a few points that I've gained, and I'd like to share them with you. Would you like to hear them? And then that's the level, yes. So people would say yes. Tell me what they are. Quite naturally, as you said yes, they would say yes, because they would think, yes, maybe there must be something I can learn here. But if I'm not practicing, then how can I really deeply affect a change in another person's heart? I was also speaking on the practical level again, getting to the down-to-earth practical level, to a friend of mine. She's a school psychologist. And they tell her that in order to be a school psychologist, or Lalita Manjari, who's a chartered accountant, the same thing applies. You have to put in so many hours a year of learning. You have to learn. You have to go to certain seminars and so on and so forth to increase your knowledge of accounting, to increase your knowledge of psychology and so on and so forth. So she said to me, you have to be under some therapy yourself in order to put other people under therapy. So I said to her, you mean you have to be learning before you can teach? Because this is our understanding. And she said, yes. That's actually what they're trying to say. You have to be learning before you can teach. There are basic self-development therapies that the only requirement to be a teacher is that you're learning it. If you're learning it, you can teach it. If you're not learning it, then all the theory, all the, I learnt this here, and this is, but you're not actually applying it, it won't work. It's activated by your own endeavor. So this is a very, very important point. Now, Srila Prabhupada is going to bring out here about this point about the Krishna consciousness movement. I'll read a little, and those who have books or who can see, please read ahead along with me, because I'll ask you some questions at the end. He says, the Krishna consciousness movement was started for this purpose. We do not teach one to meditate in a secluded place just that one may show that he has become very much advanced and may be proud of his so-called transcendental meditation, although he engages in all sorts of foolish materialistic activity. A Vaishnava like Prahlad Maharaj is not interested in such a bluff of spiritual advancement. Rather, he is interested in enlightening people in Krishna consciousness, because that is the only way for them to become happy. Prahlad Maharaj says clearly, "I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. I know this. You cannot be happy without taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. When we know this, our Krishna consciousness will become intense. And when our Krishna consciousness becomes intense, it will satisfy us. One wanders within the universe life after life, but by the grace of a devotee, a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." And who is that devotee and servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Srila Prabhupada himself, he says. "By the grace of a devotee, one can get the clue to Krishna consciousness." And what does it mean that you get the clue to Krishna consciousness? What do you think?
Gain knowledge.
Yes, gain knowledge. But why is it called a clue?
He had mercy.
It's mercy.
Yes.
You still have work to do.
You still have work to do. I like that one. You still have work to do. Right? If there's a murder case and there's a clue, that means you've got a clue, that you've got something to work on, but you've still got to do the work to work out why, how did this happen, where did it happen, and so forth. So you have to investigate further. You get the clue, then you have to do your investigations to find out more. That is the real target of life. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement are not at all interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest, where one will only make a show of meditation. Nor are they interested in opening many schools for yoga and meditation in the cities. Rather, every member of the Krishna consciousness movement is interested in going door to door to try to convince people about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Now this is the vision of a Mahabhagavat. He sees in others his own mood. When he looks at other people, he says, yes, they are just like me. They also feel the same way. And then how he describes them is how he is. Just like sometimes you meet someone, they say about their wife or so on and so forth, "Oh, she's so angry and envious and da 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 da," and so many things about anyone, any relationship where there's conflict. And you usually find that if you trace those things that you see in another person, you're seeing them from your own mind, as we were hearing earlier in the class. Because you can only see your own mind on the whole landscape of society and the world. Uh-oh. Oh. So because you can see your mind projected, you see these qualities, good or bad. So Prabhupada is saying every member of this Krishna consciousness movement is interested in going door to door. So is every member of this Krishna consciousness movement interested in going door to door? Or is this just the vision of a Mahabhagavat? But we should be interested. We should try to develop this mood ourselves, this mood of compassion. Prabhupada says further, "The members of the Krishna consciousness movement must be fully convinced that without Krishna one cannot be happy. Put your own oxygen mask on first, then you can put on your child's. Thus the Krishna conscious person avoids all kinds of pseudo-transcendentalists, spiritualists, meditators, monists, philosophers and philanthropists." They go straight to this point. Now I need to check here, did we find out if the computer is working? So I would like to stop because our time is a little short and go to a puppet show of Prahlad Maharaj. If we could turn down